Welcome to the Motherhood Simplified podcast. I'm your host, Crystal Lockwood, and on the surface, I teach you how to declutter your home so you can focus on what matters most to you as a mom, which I'm guessing isn't those laundry mountains, dishes stacked to the sky, and the tornadoes you clean up all day. My hope for this podcast is so much more than teaching you to declutter. I record all of my episodes live and in real time so that you can have the experience of a mom friend who gets you and is there for you. My audio isn't perfect, my kids might interrupt us, but the conversations we have are real, impactful, and proof that there are other moms like you that decluttering has worked for. If you want to join me and thousands of other moms for live episodes, go find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search Motherhood Simplified and we'll welcome you with open arms. See you soon. Okay, everybody. On today's episode, we have Rachel Bailey, who is a parenting specialist. She's been a parenting specialist for over a decade. She has two kids. She is a clinical psychologist. She has a master's degree. She is a certified positive, you're certified in positive discipline, right?
Correct.
And an ADHD coach. And she teaches long-term tools for raising responsible, resilient, confident children. And you guys know, I've told you this a lot of times, that yeah, we're called Motherhood Simplified, but we talk about decluttering, and I don't want to be your person to go to for parenting advice, but it does come up, especially when we are decluttering and figuring out toys and everything. And I'm really excited to introduce you to Rachel, because she does this. This is what she's good at. And I'm excited to talk with her today, so that when you guys have these questions, I can tell you, listen to this episode and go find Rachel. Okay. So Rachel, tell us, I mean, that was kind of your intro, but tell us just a little bit more about yourself.
So I've been working with families for about a decade, and it's interesting because I started my career working with children and adolescents. So I was an ADHD coach. I don't do that anymore, although people ask me about kids with ADHD all the time. But so I was working with kids and I was working with adolescents, but it's at some point, just like you're describing, parents kept asking me parenting questions. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to actually stop working with kids. I'm going to stop working with teens. And I really just need, I want to be that person that people come to find out, how do I get my kids to listen? How do I get my kids to clean up, get their shoes on? But also what really interests me, and I talk about a lot too, is how do we raise kids who are resilient, who understand the fact that they're not always going to get their way, but also kids who really feel good about themselves. Because sometimes when we talk about resilience, it's like, well, life is hard, you know, suck it up. But that doesn't ultimately lead to better self-esteem. So I talk about resilience in a way that actually builds kids' self-esteem rather than tearing it down. So those are really, I talk about a lot of, you know, a lot of parents with kids with anxiety. So almost anything you're facing as a parent, that's what I can answer.
Yes. Okay. I love that. And one of the things, you know, when I was looking at all of your content that you've created, you talk about proactive parenting, which is my jam. I love that. Cause you're kind of like getting one step ahead of them. And so tell me a little bit about, like, what does that look like?
Yeah. So basically, you know, I'm all about simplifying, just like you're simplifying motherhood and decluttering. I'm all about simplifying parenting. I find that one of the biggest obstacles to being the parents we want to be is that we are overwhelmed. And one of the first steps in simplifying parenting is being more proactive. And basically the reason for that is when we are trying to parent so much reactively in the moment, once our child hasn't cleaned up, or once they're already in the middle of being anxious, or they're already being disrespectful or not putting their shoes on, you can handle it, but it takes so much more energy and it's more complicated, very honestly. So if we want to simplify parenting, there are two main things that I talk about. One is understanding what's causing a child's behavior. Why aren't they cleaning up? Why aren't they getting their shoes on? Why are they talking back to you? And actually giving them what they need so that that doesn't happen to begin with.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, okay, because that's I've learned this. I've never been able to articulate it, which is one of the reasons that I'm like, I can't talk to you guys about this because I don't know how to articulate it. But, you know, when it comes to things like the cleaning up and the messes, mm-hmm.
for me, being proactive in that means having less stuff for them, right? Decluttering, simplifying our space to begin with. But what are some other ways that we can kind of get ahead of it so that we're not reacting? Because reacting is exhausting. And I can tell when I'm reacting and I don't like it.
Yeah.
But sometimes I don't exactly know how to
do something.
Ahead of it. Yeah.
And I do think that partly not having as much is a good place to start. But I also know that one of the reasons kids don't clean up after themselves is because of the way they're wired. And I didn't mention this in the beginning, but I was studying to be a neuropsychologist. So I know a lot about how the brain works, especially about how kids and teens' brains work. And so one of the things you need to know is that kids struggle to do monotonous things. Mm-hmm. And it's not just because it has nothing to do with ADHD. Their brains are wired for stimulation and engagement and novelty. That's a very neurotypical child's brain. So when we ask them to clean up, they may have great intentions. They start to clean, but they actually get distracted by whatever else is there that is more stimulating and engaging. Mm-hmm. So they start to clean and they're like, oh, I haven't played with that toy in a while, or I haven't done this, or, oh, look, my brother's right over there and I'm bored, so I'm going to punch him or bother him. Or no. Their brains are constantly seeking stimulation and novelty. So if you understand that and you proactively, first of all, this is another thing that you want to do proactively is create systems and routines. Mm-hmm. But in addition to the systems and routines, building in this engagement factor or the stimulation factor, and even something as simple as, like, I'll say to my kids, okay, it's time to clean up. Who are you going to be as you clean up today? And they'll be like, well, we're going to shoot a commercial and she's going to be this character and they're going to be this character. It builds the engagement into it. And there's little to zero resistance because you're working with the way their brains work rather than against their brains. So if you just say, go clean, their brains actually struggle to do that.
Yes.
Knowing that, you build this into your plan. And it's like, people call me like a magician or a fairy. All I do is I understand how kids' brains work. That's it.
Yeah. I love that because you're basically saying what, like I said, I've had this in my head, but I don't know how to articulate it. And when people, because I get asked recommendations, like, what's your favorite parenting book? I will say, go get a textbook and learn about child development and human development. And then you'll have an understanding of where they're at. So I have a question for you because it's one of the things that comes up in our group a lot. And I have my own suggestions. Obviously, everybody can do whatever they want to do. But like you're saying, their brains aren't ready for this. And I go in and help my kids. And I think sometimes people think that it's going to, like, you know, I think there's a fine line between doing it for them, mm-hmm, and kind of bridging the gap between what they're capable of 100%. And helping them get there. So do you have 100%. Any tips on that?
Yeah, I think as soon as kids can be independent, we let them be independent, but they can be independent a lot later than we think they can. Mm-hmm. Another example is getting out of the house in the morning. So a lot of parents struggle to get out of the house and they'll say, well, I'm going to get dressed. My child who's maybe 8 or 9 years old and who is physically capable of getting dressed, I'll leave them in their room and say, get dressed. And when I come back, I want you to be dressed. An 8 or 9 year old absolutely is physically capable, but they're going to get easily distracted. So if you don't help them understand, and what I do, I have a 9-year-old, I help her understand her brain and how she gets distracted, and I give her tools to be able to stay on track because it is not natural and she does not have ADHD. She's a normal 9-year-old kid who needs help.
Yeah.
So you do foster independence by giving them the tools to do what they need to do. And at certain ages, that tool is us. As they get older, it becomes, you know, maybe my daughter uses a playlist. And so she knows by the time this song is over, she needs to be on the next task. She came up with that. I didn't. So it's just these tools. Yeah. I mean, it's just teaching kids how their brains work and then they come up with tools. And again, that's how you really foster healthy self-esteem. When you say, I'm going to leave you to do this, I'm going to teach you how, and then they can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to be a Montessori teacher and that was one of the basic philosophies is teach me to do it myself, mm-hmm, because they want to be sufficient. But I do think that sometimes, you know, we have our adult brains and we forget that they're little tiny brains. They just don't know. They're asking what your name is. Her name is Rachel Bailey. And that's what I was just about to say. If you guys are liking this conversation and you want help with this, Rachel Bailey, you can find her You can find her on Facebook.
I do have a podcast too. So.
Oh, you do. What's the name of your podcast?
My podcast is Your Parenting Long Game.
Okay. Yes. And the long game, that was one of the other things that I wanted to talk to you about, because you've mentioned it just in the videos that I watched of yours, is that a lot of times when we are being reactive, we are seeking band-aid solutions, and she offers you long-term solutions, which is what I talked to you guys about in here too. Like, this isn't a band-aid solution. I'm not going to give you shortcuts. I'll give you things that work long-term. So you can definitely go check her out. And if you guys have questions while you're watching live, post them and we can ask her here. So I have a question, because I have toddlers, right? Like, and this is something that comes up for me, is that sometimes I know that they can, you know, like when they can physically do something, I know that they're capable. I think sometimes parents feel like they're being taken advantage of or something.
Totally.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So basically, there are three main reasons kids misbehave, including manipulating. There are three main reasons. One, we already hit on, that they don't have the tools to do what we ask. Mm-hmm. And I do want to just reemphasize that just because a child is physically capable, that doesn't mean they're developmentally or cognitively capable. So yes, toddlers can clean, but they also have a really short attention span, and they're not going to be able to clean a lot, and they're going to need some help with that stimulation. So it's the tools, and there are about four or five tools that kids are missing that prevent them from behaving. But the second piece of this really leads to the manipulation. This is what I call the concept of yuck. And yuck is a really simple idea, but it's this idea that when human beings are in a good place, we do what we're supposed to do. If your kids are in a good mood, they're going to listen to you. They're going to clean up. They're going to put their shoes on. But when they're in a place of yuck, and yuck is a blanket term I use to describe anything uncomfortable. So they're hungry, they're tired, they're feeling like you've been telling them what to do all day. They're feeling like they don't have enough control. They're feeling like you haven't spent a lot of time with them. When they're in this place of yuck, their very, very immature brains will take that yuck and they will do something to try to get that need met. So if they feel out of control because they feel like they've been told what to do all day long, which by definition of parenting, we kind of have to do.
Right.
Feel like that, then they're going to get control by manipulating. They're not doing it necessarily at a conscious level, although as kids get older, it does become conscious.
Yeah.
Their brain is simply meeting their needs. And that's another tie-in to proactive parenting, is that when we are meeting these emotional needs, and there are five emotional needs I talk about, when we're meeting their emotional needs proactively, it is amazing that your kids will do what you want them to do, as long as they have the tools. They will do what you want them to do, and they will make really healthy choices. However, if any of their emotional needs is low, I describe these like accounts. If their account is low, they will find a way to get that need met in an unhealthy way. So if they feel out of control, they will start to try to control by not listening to you, by speaking disrespectfully, by whatever their brain needs to do to get that need met, they will do it. So it's, again, maybe you haven't been able to give your kids a lot of attention, and so they'll get attention in negative ways. However, if we fill those needs more proactively, I don't pay attention to my kids all the time, but what I do is I very proactively and consciously make sure I'm meeting that need at a time that works for me, so that they're not trying to get it in a negative way later. It's a little bit selfish in a way, but I'm meeting their needs in a way that I can do it, because that leads to so much better behavior later when I'm exhausted. Does that make sense?
It's proactive. It's the definition of proactive.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Yep. All right.
And the way I teach parents to meet these needs, like, it takes like a minute or 2 minutes. No, nothing that I teach takes longer than that. Yet it saves all that time of fighting in the moment, which is the reactive parenting, the band-aid parenting that I talk about.
Yeah. And it's just not a sustainable solution. We can't react and expect great things.
Correct.
I love that you normalize this too. I think it's really refreshing, because I think sometimes I used to be a teacher. And because I have a degree in child development, I know this stuff is normal, but so often I think people are like, it's not normal. It's not okay. And it's like, no, it is. They don't need anything other than you to recognize that this is how kids develop.
That's exactly right. And honestly, the more you normalize it in your own mind, the less anxiety you have. And kids, for better or worse, I think this is for worse, but they sense our energy. And I think it puts a lot of pressure on us as parents, because, like many of us know, when we're in a bad place, our kids feel that and their behavior gets worse. So the more we can normalize, that's why I talk all the time. I mean, I have lots of people who hear my parenting tips. I mess up all the time. I want to bring my kids onto the show sometime to say all the things I do wrong. We do mess up, but because I spend so much energy proactively parenting, my kids still do really listen to me and we have a great relationship. Mm-hmm. But you have to normalize it. Otherwise you're going to be anxious and that's not good for your kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So one question I have for you, I know you don't specifically do the ADHD stuff anymore, but when it comes to kids and their environments, do you, what's your thoughts on the relationship between how their behavior manifests and the environment that they're in?
That's a great question. And I used to think it was really black and white until my daughter changed my mind a little bit, but pretty simply, when there is clutter, I mean, you say this all the time, Krista, when there is clutter around, we sense that. And it can really create just a discomfort inside of us that we don't handle very well. That's certainly going to affect children. There's no question. What I will say, though, is I have a daughter who once said to me, because I do keep my environment pretty well organized. And I asked my daughter, we were cleaning up her room, and she said, she was younger, so she didn't really, you know, she said this very innocently. She said, you know, Mom, we're cleaning my room and it's fine, but I actually like having clutter around. And I was like, what do you mean you like clutter? Because I don't like clutter at all. And she's like, this is my very creative child. And she said, it actually helps me to think of things to make when I see all these things around me. It doesn't make me feel clutter. It doesn't make me feel bad is the word she used. It makes me feel good and gives me lots of ideas. Mm-hmm. So she and I had this conversation about how having stuff around is okay, but when it impacts how you feel or when it impacts your ability to find things, then it's a problem.
Yeah.
So some kids are more like her where they actually like to have stuff around, but I would say for the most part, kids sense that as a negative energy and it negatively.
Yeah, Tara's like, I feel that.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's the same is true for adults too. We all have our own, basically our own thresholds of what we can tolerate. And I have a daughter who, she loves to collect trash.
Yes. She,
everything is an inspiration to her.
That's exactly the way my daughter is. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all an inspiration. And we have those kinds of conversations too of like, okay, I've noticed that, you know, you've been avoiding your room and you haven't been making things anymore. Like maybe we can go in and make it a little bit more workable for you. So yeah. I love that. That's a very honest answer. And like I said, adults, I talk to the moms in here all the time too. Like some moms don't want anything on their kitchen counters. And some are like, but it feels so empty and I feel alone.
Yes, absolutely. And it is so unique. It really is. What makes someone feel comfortable? So the key is, what is that comfort level? And helping kids recognize that sometimes you can pass that comfort level. And like you said, if they're avoiding their room or if it's no longer an inspiration and it becomes a stress, like I can't find things, that's when it's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So on the same kind of note, because this is another thing that comes up a lot, and I think you'll have a really good insight into this, but sometimes too, like when we have like kids, especially 5 and under, you know, we love having all of the shelves with all of the bins and all the things inside of them, and the kids go dump it. And then we're like, okay, time to clean up. And they just kind of dump it more and throw it around. And I know this because I taught for a long time, but it's actually impossible for the kids to make sense of too much stuff and to know where the things go. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think under 5, I would say starting at 5, they might be able to do this, but yeah, definitely 4 and under, it is hard for them to make sense of where things go. There's a lot more helping. You were talking about helping your kids. There's a lot more helping at that age and matching things rather than them getting the sense of clean and clutter. They don't know that yet. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And like matching and sorting, that's a skill that they're developing. And so when we're like, you got to clean this up, and they're like, they can't say it. They don't know how to verbalize. They're like, I really don't know how.
100%. So when I work with parents of the younger ones, we talk about that a lot and how to create systems that help them. It's very similar to what you teach, how to create systems that help them help their kids be successful, because that's ultimately how you build resilience and help them self-esteem. Yep.
Yes. So guys, I'll put all of Rachel's information in the description so that you can go find her and get all of these tips from her. Because like I said, it's just not what I'm great at, but she is.
what I do all day long, every day. And I love it because any way I can reduce the stress of any parent, that's what I love. So.
Yes. Yeah. I like, you've got a good balance between making sure that it's working for the kids and it's working for the adults.
Yes. That's actually a huge part of what I do is I talked about that concept of yuck for kids. I also deal with a lot of the yuck we are facing as parents as well.
Yes. 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 Well, hang on one second. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. I feel like Tara is at the end of her rope. but where's the best place for people to find you? Yes. Where's the best place for people to find you?
So definitely if you're interested in podcasts, I have my podcast, Your Parenting Long Game. I'm also on Facebook at Rachel Bailey Parenting, Instagram at Rachel Bailey Parenting. And then I do have a Facebook group as well, which is Your Parenting Long Game podcast group.
I love it. Thank you so much, Rachel.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Hey friend, did you love this episode? If you did, I would love if you took a screenshot of it and shared it with somebody else. Okay, the whole point of this is to create a community of moms who get each other, who support each other, and who, when they find something that helps them, they share it with somebody. So I would love if you shared this podcast with somebody, with maybe just a little note about how it helped you or how it inspired you so that it can help somebody else. I would also love it if you left me a review. Leaving a review lets me get better stats on the internet and blah, blah, blah. Basically, it helps me help more moms like you. I would so appreciate it. If you hated this episode, I'm sorry, but I'm also kind of impressed that you listened to it all. And you're still listening. So still leave me a review, still share it because I'm sure somebody can benefit from it. I'll see you guys on the next episode.